Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Aren't you glad it's Friday? Oh, Lord. What do I got planned for tomorrow? Nothing. Hey, Nova M founding members, you are probably aware, I don't know, I don't mention this as much as I should. We put up a video every week in the NovaMRadio.com what is it called? Member section? Subscriber section? If you go to that section, click on the videos, what we're doing every week is reading two or three emails that come to the program that are usually less than flattering. And since it's not for broadcast, we just read them as they are written. And sometimes it's a lot of fun. The halfwits that write the hate mail to this program are just, oh my God, they are so funny. They're so funny. I like the ones who misspell the F word. The anthrax guy. Well, it wasn't Hat Phil. Turns out it was somebody else. And just as they're about to close in on him, he commits suicide. Yes, indeed. Couple emails on it real quick. Bob in Miami said, "Hey, Mike, I'm so relieved they finally solved the anthrax case, and how nice did the scumbag to save the taxpayer money by, quote, committing suicide, end quote. No government cover-up there, by God, as Neil Rogers would say, I don't know whether to scream or eat a banana." If you don't know who Neil Rogers is, he's I don't know, would you call him, I guess you'd call him a liberal, progressive talk show host in Miami. He's been there since God was a teenager. Great talent, absolutely wonderful talent. I think Randy knows him. Randy knows him pretty well, Randy Rhodes. Neil and I used to work for the same media conglomerate, Cox Communications, and I've never met him, but I used to listen to his program, and he just absolutely cracks me up. I don't know. What did Bob say? As Neil Rogers would say, I don't know whether to scream or eat a banana. Prairie 2 writes, "Hey, Mike, on July 22nd, a toady for the Department of Homeland Security briefed the Congressional Subcommittee on Emerging Threats, Cybersecurity, and Science and Technology. And the guy testified that, quote, the risk of a large-scale biological attack on the nation is significant, and that the U.S. government knows its terrorist enemies have sought to use biological agents as instruments of warfare," end quote. He also claimed that the United States believes that capability is within the terrorist instruments, terrorist reach, and, quote, U.S. analysis indicates that anthrax is the most likely choice, and a successful single-city attack on an unprepared population could kill hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens, end quote. And then the guy in his testimony went on to speculate about an attack from Al-Qaeda. They don't want you to remember that there was a crazy religious doomsday cult in Japan in the 80s that spent millions of dollars to develop weaponized anthrax and did two massive attacks in 90 and 92 against targets in Tokyo and U.S. military bases, and what they used were sprayers mounted on trucks and rooftops. Despite the release of tons of toxin, nobody noticed. The attack wasn't uncovered until the Japanese government raided them after the sarin gas attack in the Tokyo subway that killed several people. You really need a sophisticated military lab to make weaponized anthrax that will work. I don't think it's any surprise that the Democrats in Congress are afraid of the Bush crime family. Unlike Al-Qaeda, the Bush crime family actually has a lab like that and have been willing to use it. Of course, now they're down one scientist. Yeah, the anthrax square, thanks, Pray 2. The anthrax square, as Pray 2 points out in this, and yeah, I remember now when the, what was the cult in Japan? Anyway, they released tons of anthrax toxin. Nobody got sick. Nothing happened because it wasn't weaponized. It's a biological agent, and apparently it has to be absorbable or weaponized. I don't know. But anyway, we have a little bit more on the guy who committed suicide today. Boy, it didn't take long to get his psychiatric records out there, did it, huh? The guy committed suicide. It was just announced. Wasn't it just announced today that he committed suicide? He ate the pills on Sunday. They took him to the hospital. He died on Tuesday. Today's Friday. They're just releasing the information. Oh, put your tin foil hat on, everybody. And his psychiatric records are already out there. His psychiatrist said he was, a potential mass killer, right? Isn't that what his, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but didn't his psychiatrist say something like that? Boy, didn't take long. Dr. Ivins is his name, Bruce Ivins. Where is he? I've got the story here. He had a doctorate from the University of Cincinnati. Appeared to have been a brilliant but deeply troubled man. His attorney refuses to buy the guilty story. The attorney says, I could have proved his innocence. Oh, well. We'll get to it a little bit later. But it never fails to amaze me how quickly all this information is released. Now, I realize that there were depositions. The government has been going after this guy, not necessarily depositions, but apparently the feds have been investigating this guy for quite some time. So, but just the way it works like clockwork, doesn't it? The guy eats codeine-laced Tylenol. What is it? Tylenol 3. Overdoses on Tylenol 3. Winds up in the hospital. 48 hours later, dies. 72 hours later, all of his records are released.
How was the DC Madam found dead?
Yeah, she. DC Madam, the guy from Enron. They all commit suicide. They just all commit suicide. John in Nova Scotia sent me an email regarding, we were talking about last night, about Cheney and the boys sitting around talking about using some American military personnel to as unwilling or unwitting victims in staging an attack that would result in a reason or an excuse or a casus belli to go after the Iranians. And John in Nova Scotia writes, listen to your show from last night, July 31, regarding Cheney's plans to stage a, quote, incident, end quote, to provoke a war with Iran. No mystery here, Mike. It's been done before. The Cheney-Bush cartel is just mimicking those master criminals who have led the way. There is a certain eeriness in this paraphrase from Wikipedia, which concerns one of the many incidents the Nazis used to justify war with Poland when they invaded in September 39. Here's what it says, quote, oh, they invaded September 1st. On the night of August 31st, 1939, a small group of German operatives dressed in Polish uniforms seized the Gliwice radio station, then part of German Silesia, and broadcast a short anti-German message in Polish. The Germans' goal was to make the attack and the broadcast look like the work of anti-German Polish saboteurs. In order to make the attack seem more convincing, the Germans brought in a German Silesian known for sympathizing with the Poles, who had been arrested the previous day by the Gestapo. He was dressed to look like a saboteur, then killed by lethal injection, given gunshot wounds, and left dead at the scene so that he appeared to have been killed while attacking the station. His corpse was subsequently presented as proof of the attack to the police and the press. Mike, I'm sure the Cheney-Bush cartel has studied this. I find there's a striking familiarity here. I'm sure it would be easy to find someone who has been, quote, dressed in an Iranian uniform, end quote, someone who has perhaps been renditioned. Keep it lit. Cheers, John in Nova Scotia.
Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. It's more of Mike Malloy. It is 21 past the hour. Yes, the Japanese cult was Aum Shinrikyo. Now, don't email me and tell me how badly I pronounced that. Okay. Thank you very much for the people who wrote that in. Walmart. Walmart, you know, we needed something the other day for Molly's fourth birthday party and couldn't find it at Target. And we knew it was at Walmart. We just didn't get it. I hate Walmart. It's very irrational to hate a retail outlet. It makes makes no sense. But I can't deal with Walmart. According to the Wall Street Journal, in today's edition, page one, right out there in front, Wall Street Journal, Walmart Stores is mobilizing its store managers and department supervisors around the country to, in turn, warn the employees that if Democrats win power in November, White House and or Senate and House, or all three, the Democrats will likely change federal law to make it easier for workers to, oh Christ, to unionize, including the workers who work at Walmart. Oh my God, no, not that, anything but that. In recent weeks, according to the Wall Street Journal, thousands of Walmart store managers and department heads have been summoned to mandatory meetings at which the retailer stresses the downside for workers if stores were to be unionized. What could that be? The downside. Never mind. According to about a dozen Walmart employees who attended such meetings in seven states, Walmart executives claim that employees at unionized stores would have to pay hefty union dues while getting nothing in return. Oh, Christ, really? Is that how it works? And they may have to go on strike without compensation. No union. Also, according to Walmart, unionization could mean fewer jobs as labor costs rise. Forget the fact that our profit is off the chart and the family are all billionaires. But if these goddamn workers want an extra dollar an hour, do you know what's going to happen? The actions by Walmart, according to the Wall Street Journal, which, by the way, is the Walmart, the nation's largest private employer. The actions by Walmart reflect a growing concern among big business that a reinvigorated labor movement could reverse years of declining union membership. Oh, no, not that. Oh, not reverse years of declining union membership. Oh, no. Oh, my God. The Walmart human resources managers who run the meetings don't specifically tell attendees how to vote in November's election, according to Wall Street Journal, but they make it clear that voting for Democratic presidential hopeful Senator Barack Obama would be tantamount to inviting unions in. And the right-wing Christian preachers never endorse a candidate, you know, because then they would lose their tax-exempt status. They just say things like, hell waits for you if you make a mistake of voting for someone, who could that be, who believes in a woman's right to privacy, for example, or who believes that gay folks should have the right to marry. Now, I'm not trying to tell you how to vote, brother. Sister, can I get an amen? Thank you. I'm just telling you that hell waits. Now, you see, there's no suggestion there to vote for McCain or Bush or anybody. Just the implication that hell waits. And the implication from Walmart that you'll have to go on strike, standing out in the cold and the wet and the wind and the rain, and you get no compensation while you're on strike, and the strike won't work, and your children will starve, all because you allowed in those dirty, rotten unions. One Walmart customer service supervisor from Missouri said, the meeting leader said, I'm not telling you how to vote, but if the Democrats win, this bill will pass and you won't have a vote on whether you want to join a union. You won't even have a vote. But, she said, I'm not a stupid person. They were telling me how to vote. The bill will pass and you won't have a vote on whether you want a union. Son of a bitch. All right, let's socialize Walmart, too. Let's get rid of it. We don't need Walmart. Screw Walmart.
Oh, but Mike, it provides all kinds of material good stuff for people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford material good stuff. Don't be an elitist. You and your goddamn Target. And your Sears.
More on this when we come back, because there's a follow-up. And all this happened in the same day. It all happened today. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
You're gonna spread your wings. You're gonna retake the sky. But until that morning, they're gonna work you for peanuts.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So Walmart is getting their managers and people together and making it very clear, a vote for Democrats, pass this on to your people in your departments. Vote for Democrats means that it'll make it easier for unions to come in and find out if the workers want to organize. As it is now, it's damn near impossible. Everything is stacked against organized labor for the obvious reasons. Organized labor is not what corporate America wants. That's why every time now, don't take me literally here, please. But every time the unemployment figures go up, or every time there are another 40 or 50, 60,000 jobs lost, stock market has a good day. Why? Because employee wages are, they're not an asset. It's a drain on a company's cash flow. That's how it's seen. So when employees disappear, the stock has to go up. Well, they've got more money. And like I say, that's my simplistic explanation. Don't email me with a more correct, lengthy explanation. So anyway, Walmart is now instructing its people, not its hourly employees. That would be against the law. But it's instructing It's salary people, the supervisor. Go back to your home store and tell them what we've told you. Now, all this is about a piece of legislation known as the Employee Free Choice Act. Employee Free Choice Act. Now, you got to pay attention to the titles of acts. You've got, like, the USA Patriot Act. Right? USA Patriot Act. Was nothing about being a patriot. It was about being a slobbering, gibbering coward. And being run by cowards. But that's a different story. This one is called the Employee Free Choice Act, and it is what it sounds like. Sometimes the title of an act gives you a clear indication what it's about. Employee Free Choice Act. Now, companies say that would enable unions to quickly add millions of new members.
Oh God. Oh, no.
A spokesman for Walmart said, we believe the Employee Free Choice Act is a bad bill. We believe. Walmart believes it's a bad bill. Oh, really? And he goes on, and we've been on record as opposing it for some time. And here's the part I like. However, we feel educating our associates about the bill is the right thing to do. Educating? Educating your associates. That's what you're doing. No, you're not, you lying corporate son of a bitch. No, you're not. You're telling some of your supervisors, if this Democratic Party, as right-wing as it is, gets into office as a ham bone thrown to the liberals, they're going to try to make it easier to organize unions inside our stores, and they are our stores. That's not education. That's fear and loathing and threats. Now, business-backed organizations, according to the Wall Street Journal, are also running ads aimed at building opposition to the bill, including a group called, get this, the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. See what I mean? The titles of some of these organizations, Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. It should be called Coalition for Predatory Capitalism to be able to feed on the bodies of workers. But no, it's called Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. The coalition, by the way, counts several hundred industry associations as members. Really? Here's another one. Another group is called the Employee Freedom Action Committee. The Employee Freedom Action Committee. It should say the Employee Slavery Shut Your Goddamn Mouth and Take What We Give You Committee. It's run by a former tobacco lobbyist named Rick Berman. Now, these groups, the Employee Freedom Action Committee and the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace, are not affiliated with each other, but they say they have a total of $50 million in funding. $50 million in order to lobby. Lobby. Yeah, that means turn members of Congress into whores. No offense to sex workers. Here's your money. Now bend over or lay down or whatever position you want it in. But don't vote for these goddamn workers. $50 million. Now, neither of these two groups, the Employee Freedom Action Committee or the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace, will disclose which companies or individuals have provided funding. Well, of course not. Why should they? The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a nest of fascist bastards, if ever one existed, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has made defeat of this legislation, the Employee Free Choice Act, their top priority. Why, in the last 6 months, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Chamber of Commerce has flown state and local chamber members to Washington to lobby members of Congress. Lay down. Which way do you want it? Here's your check. And yesterday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce began airing a television ad in Minnesota and plans to run ads in other states as part of a broader campaign to inform the American public, along with the Employee Freedom Action Committee and the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace, that down the road to union membership lies hell waiting for you. This is astonishing, isn't it? This is where we live. It was only the union movement in this country who did anything, anything for the workers. What, the National Association of Manufacturers has done something? What, besides kill workers? The various governments have done something? What, besides kill workers? It has only been the union movement that provided everything from civil rights laws to protection for bankers to unemployment comp to the 40-hour work week to paid vacations to health care to education benefits for veterans. It was the union movement and nobody else. Nobody else. Nobody. The union movement. And see, our kids don't know that. I remember when I was in high school, a long time ago, we were taught about the union movement. Until I die, I will carry with me in my head a picture of John L. Lewis of the United Mine Workers. Why? Because he had the bushiest eyebrows of, and around his face, and he looked like somebody that would take a sledgehammer handle and just beat your ass into a bloody pulp if you got in the way of the union movement, which was essentially true. And I'll never forget Walter Reuther being labeled a communist. United Auto Workers. God. And then the Wall Street Journal says, Walmart may be walking a fine legal line by holding meetings with its store department heads that link politics with a strong anti-union message. Federal rules permit companies to advocate for specific political candidates to its executives, its stockholders, and its salaried managers, but not to hourly employees. While store managers are on salary, department supervisors are hourly employees. So, Wall Street Journal, what does your sentence mean? They may be walking a fine legal line when in your own article you quote department supervisors who attended the meetings. It doesn't sound like a fine legal line to me, Wall Street Journal. It sounds like a prima facie case for lawbreaking. There it is, right there. Criminal activity. Oh, never mind. Now, that happened. That was in today's Wall Street Journal. It stands this morning. It's probably online last night. Well, Associated Press has this from Little Rock, Arkansas. Walmart Stores Incorporated, this is a dateline at 2:11 p.m. today. Walmart Stores Incorporated, the world's largest retailer, denied a report Friday that it had pressured employees to vote against Democrats in November. Well, but
that's not what the Wall Street Journal said you did. So why are you denying something that you haven't been accused of, except by that crazy son of a bitch Mike Malloy? No one accused you of that. Why are you denying it?
The measure, called the Employee Free Choice Act, would allow labor organizations to unionize workplaces without secret ballot elections. It was co-sponsored by Barack Obama and opposed by John McCain. Walmart spokesman Dave Capitalist Pig, well, that's not his real last name, told the Associated Press that the company did discuss the bill with its employees, including what it sees as the negative impact, and noted that the company's stand on the legislation is no secret. But the company wasn't advocating, he said, that its employees vote against backers of the legislation. Oh, no! If anyone representing Walmart gave that impression, they're wrong. We never would do that, because you know why? That would be against the law!
to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
10 before the hour, after the break, the top of the hour, we have some John McCain stuff for you that you're going to find scary. Anyway, back to the Walmart story. The Employee Free Choice Act, which may make it easier for people who would like to be unionized to be unionized. And, of course, corporate America is wetting its pants. Chamber of Commerce is launching all-out attacks. All sorts of phony organizations are being put together to fight against collective bargaining. Organizations with names like, what did I say? The God Loves You If You're a Worker Act, or the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. The Employee Freedom Action Committee. Freedom from a Decent Wage. That's what they're talking about. Freedom from health care. Freedom from being able to work a 40-hour work week and be paid. Freedom from being locked into the goddamn Walmart at night if your job isn't done. Yeah! Freedom! Employee freedom! Freedom! Freedom for the employee freedom! The freedom, employee freedom, and the Coalition for a Democratic Work... Yeah, okay, sure. You see, Walmart is worried. It's the nation's largest private employer. It has 1.4 million workers, and it has the power to exert influence in the elections. So after the Wall Street Journal story this morning, and the Wall Street Journal story, in the quotes from the a person who is at the meeting, who is an hourly wage employee, a direct quote, A, and then B, a little tossing of the law out there on the part of the Wall Street Journal. You're not allowed to do that. There's a prima facie case being made in the Wall Street Journal article that Walmart has violated the law. So I'm surprised it took them until 2:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to respond to the Wall Street Journal article. And a Walmart spokesman said that the company, Walmart, isn't advocating that its employees vote against backers of the legislation. Oh, God, no. Why would we do that? We love the legislation. We love you. Are you the Associated Press? Are you? We love you. We love everybody. We love Barack Obama. We love, I don't know. We love anything, everything. And then this guy, Dave Tovar, whose middle name is Capitalist Pig, said, if anyone representing Walmart gave that impression that you know, we were advocating against the legislation, no, they're wrong, and they're acting without our approval. In fact, he said, Walmart has been working with both Republicans and Democrats. Another non sequitur. What does that mean, jackass? You've been working... what? What's the implication? What Democrats? Democrats from the South? We know about Democrats from the South, don't we, bro, huh? Stuart Acuff, the assistant to the president of the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest labor organization. It is an umbrella organization now. It is not it's not a union in and of itself. Stuart Acuff said, quote, they're trying to bully the American political scene. Yeah, Stuart, they are. I know Stuart. I know Stuart real well. Used to live here in Atlanta. And we ought to call him, Kathy. We ought to get Stuart on this next week. So it's amazing how quickly, isn't it? The Wall Street Journal comes out this morning and says, essentially, Walmart is violating the law, A, B, they are trying to dictate to their employees that if you vote Democratic, if you vote for the Democrats, this legislation is probably going to pass, and then the union organizers are going to come in here and they're going to give you check-off cards. See, no secret ballot. They're going to give you these goddamn cards. All you have to do is check them off. We can't fight against that, you see? If it were secret ballots, then we could use intimidation and terror against you. We could get your
ass in the employee restroom, and we could say, listen, Sally, you know, if you go into the secret ballot room and vote for a union, you know what's going to happen. Now, we know you're divorced. We know you have three children. We know that the $312 a week after taxes that you take here from your friends at Walmart is paying your rent, and it is keeping your 1987 Chevy going, but you know what's going to happen, Sally, if you vote for this? You're going to be fired. Oh, okay, I won't vote for it. Good girl. Where's Norma Rae when you need her, right? The checkoff cards that come with this new legislation would could be handed out by union organizers. Give it to the workers. The workers take a look at it and say, yeah, I'd like to be represented by a union. Check it off, hand it back. You know, sign it and all that, put on their ID so everything can be checked out. The National Labor Relations Board gets the cards, looks at them, says, okay, time for a vote. Now the National Labor Relations Board has become nothing but a passel of horrors. Also, no offense to sex workers. Because the National Labor Relations Board under Reagan and Pappy Bush and Clinton and Junior Bush is nothing but a rubber stamp for corporate America. If corporate America says to the NLRB, we don't like the activities of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, they're coming in here and trying to organize, NLRB will make sure that the IBEW somehow just can't get back in there to organize the workers wherever there is. It's time for this country to begin seriously considering two things: a socialist approach to several key necessary industries in this country. And I left one off last night. A couple of people reminded me: the water industry, transportation, energy. What was the other one, Kathy? Transportation, energy. Jeez, I forgot my own argument. Oh, well. It'll come back to me. I'm just focused on this McCain stuff, which we're going to play for you as soon as we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Healthcare. Thank you. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Both McCain and Obama were in Florida today, and McCain took the opportunity to address the Urban League convention in Panama City about Barack Obama's race baiting. Jesus, God. Obama, well, we'll get to Obama in a minute. Obama was heckled at a campaign rally in St. Pete by the Uhuru, what's it called? Uhuru, a black Uhuru? Is it Swahili for freedom? The Uhuru movement in the U.S. They have a website. You can look it up. Look them up. But anyway, I want to do this first. This is insane. McCain speaking to the media. He did a press briefing after his Panama City, Florida speech to the Urban League. I would have liked to. I didn't hear any of that. I wish somebody would go through it and just send me all the asinine clips, but it doesn't work that way. But I want you to listen to this and consider whether or not he has Alzheimer's. Now, I'm not using it as an insult. I've had one family member die of Alzheimer's. But you've got to wonder if this guy is into the intermediate stages of that disease. How else would you explain his decision to berate Barack Obama for what McCain claims are Obama's race-baiting remarks? And he did this at the Urban League convention today, the Urban League. Now, you probably guess he got an expected chilly reception. And then he held a brief news conference at the Panama City Marina and answered some questions, starting with this one about his accusation that Obama is using the race card. Now, listen to the way he responds. I actually think he couldn't remember or understand the reporter's question. Now listen. The reporter says, Senator, can you explain why you and your... Oh, okay, we've got the senator, we've got the question on... okay, let's listen.
Senator, can you explain why you and your campaign manager have specifically said that Obama played the race card with his comments the other day? Sure. And can you elaborate when you said that you fought for equal rights for your entire life, what specifically you've done focusing on improving the lives of African Americans?
All right. First of all, the first question that you said, why am I...
What it is, when your campaign manager, God, you reiterated that you backed Davis
I think,
in saying
I think
he
his,
played the race card.
Because
can you
I
elaborate?
Think his comments were clearly with the race card because of what he said. Everybody can read his remarks, and in fact, his campaign retracted those remarks. So I think it's very clear, and I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed at his comments.
Oh.
And so his campaign retracted those remarks, so... Let's move on.
Don't ask me that question again because I don't know where I'm at. I don't know who you are, and I don't know what the hell the question was. But do you hear that? Do you hear that? A simple, straightforward, granted, the sentence has two subjects. You know, about the race card, and secondly, you said you fought for equal rights your entire life. What specifically have you done? Of course, that part never got addressed, right? But there it is. But let's move on. So McCain popped a couple of memory-enhancing Aricepts or something and then soldiered on through this brief presser. Another reporter asked McCain about a website critical of McCain's misleading political ads, a website. You know, McCain can't even navigate his own website, much less surf the net. Now, here's the question.
Senator, factcheck.org, the nonpartisan fact-checking website, has cited eight or nine of your recent ads as containing false or misleading information. I was wondering how you would respond to this, and how do you reconcile it with your pledge to run an honorable campaign?
I don't respond to websites that I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm proud of our campaign. We have been fair. We have been balanced. And we have... pointed out the differences between myself and Senator Obama. And I'd be glad to go through those with you.
Uh-huh.
He wants higher taxes. I want to keep taxes low.
Oh.
He wants the government to run the health care system in America. I want the families to make the choice. He says that the surge didn't work and couldn't work and fails to acknowledge it. I know we have succeeded and are on the road to victory in Iraq. He says that he's opposed to offshore drilling. I am in support of it. So we could go down a long list, and those are part of the advertising we're going. So I have no idea what a website is referring to.
I have no idea what a website is. First of all, Senator, you might want to modify your remarks because Barack Obama is now on the record of supporting offshore drilling, just like you. You were the one that was against it, and you switched.
Your friend, the Republican governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, is on the record as being against it. He switched. Barack Obama was on the record of being against it. He switched. Come on, Senator. That was a fairly brief news conference here in Panama City with McCain because, you know, it was close to nap time. And it's hot in the Florida sun, and you can't be too careful about melanomas popping up all over the place, you know. Ooh, there's one. Get it. But this next reporter asked about the negative campaign ads mocking Obama as a celebrity or as Moses. McCain thinks they're funny. They're just real knee slappers. God damn, that's funny. Especially one that features his old buddy, the recently deceased Charlton Heston, as Moses. Didn't old Charlton Heston have a few memory issues too?
Please tell us the thinking behind this new web ad that mocks Obama as a messiah-like figure.
We were having some fun. We're having some fun with our supporters that we sent it out to, and we're going to display a sense of humor in this campaign.
Yeah.
I noticed a couple of days ago that Senator Obama challenged me to a duel.
Ah!
Well, lightsabers is my weapon of choice.
Follow up on that, Senator. The political video today does use religious imagery. Some people might have questions about that. And where does mocking, as it has been described by some of your critics, no longer include a respectful campaign? Where is the line for you?
This is a very respectful campaign. I repeated my admiration and respect for Senator Obama. That clip is of Charlton Heston. It's a movie. It's a film. Movie. So I really appreciated the movie, and I appreciated Charlton Heston's magnificent acting skills as I saw it, but it's a movie.
It's a movie. Wait a minute, my friends. Did I say that already? Did I say it twice? Huh? What was I just saying about duels? I like that movie about the gunfight, too. You know, High Noon, Gary Cooper was a good egg. Eggs. He's a good egg. Eggs. Wait, I'm hungry. It's hot here, my friends. I'll bet you could fry an egg on my head. Oh, where's Cindy with the copper tone? I need a fresh coat of 50 block out here, doctor's orders. Hey, why are all these people standing here with microphones? Is there a celebrity out here? Paris Hilton? Ida Lupino? Somebody got a Kleenex? I'm starting to drool again. Oh, my God. The clip is of Charlton Heston. It's a movie. It's a film, a movie. And it's a talkie. And it's in color and CinemaScope. Oh, my God.
I loved what he had to say about lightsabers. You got to admit, he does look a little like Yoda.
Yoda, yeah. All right, we'll be back with a clip about or from Barack Obama as he's challenged by Uhuru.
Kills a kitten.
Oh, really? You playing that again? You know how many people that pissed off? 21 past the hour. All right, McCain, this is from today also. He said today that he believes big oil. When these monstrous, predatory, capitalist, polluting, death-dealing, just slobbering companies like ExxonMobil, what they say about the amount of oil still available in the offshore, off the coast of the United States, the continental shelf,
McCain believes that, rather than the estimates offered by energy experts, economists, and the government's own Energy Information Administration. No, he'll go with the big oil people. A questioner in the crowd at the National Urban League conference in Orlando today asked McCain about reports that offshore drilling would reap no benefits for consumers for at least a decade, if even then. And if you've been following that story, it's 10 to 15 years. That's what the real estimates are from people who understand this. And any difference at the pump might be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 cents a gallon. That's B. C is very little of this oil, one would assume, just like very little of the oil from the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge, very little of this oil will go to energy needs of the United States. It's going to be sold to China and India, for Christ's sake. We are cutting our use. China and India are expanding. What, the oil's going to stay here? Oh, my God! How can we be this stupid? It's not going to stay here. But anyway, I digress. McCain said, I don't agree with the experts. He said, in fact, I met with oil executives just a few days ago in California, and the fact is that we can, using existing facilities, expand our oil production within months. He went on, in my view and that of oil company executives that I've talked to, the people that actually do it, not those that comment on television, but those that actually do it, we could have a beneficial effect as we bridge the gap between our dependence on foreign oil and becoming energy independent. So, I disagree with those experts, and I've talked to the actual people who do the work that are in the business that say within months we can have additional oil supply for this nation, so we ought to drill now. Well, maybe McCain or the oil execs who he spoke with should check in with the American Petroleum Institute. That's the industry association that tries to convince America, especially people that watch TV, that they are just all in favor of little kids running around and breathing clean air under rainbows with pink ponies nearby, and oh, it's all so wonderful. The American Petroleum Institute says, if the moratoria on offshore drilling are all lifted, how long would it be before we start seeing production? This is a fact sheet from them, dated July 15th, 2008. The American Petroleum Institute says before a lease sale could even occur, a complete environmental study would have to be conducted by the government. Once leased, it would take anywhere from 5 to 10 years for production to begin. Depending on the amount of oil and gas discovered, the availability of infrastructure, and the geological complexity of the region. In an area like Destin Dome, that's off the Florida Panhandle, offshore Florida, where there is a confirmed discovery of natural gas and infrastructure, supplies could come on more quickly, perhaps 5 years. Frontier and deep water areas with no infrastructure in place would take longer. Now, this fact sheet from the American Petroleum Institute has 10 frequently asked questions in the answers. And most of them are what you would expect from the American Petroleum Institute. But that second one, if the moratoria are lifted, how long would it take before we start seeing production? 5 to 10 years. McCain says a couple of months. McCain says, well, I've talked to the oil producers. You dumb bastard. You're worse than Bush. This guy, it's astonishing stuff. It's astonishing stuff. Oh, my God. McCain says, nah, we'll have more oil in months. Now, the other thing that McCain said that is factually incorrect is about Barack Obama. And when we come back after this break, we got two things for you from Barack. Oh, by the way, Michael Savage was fired from, he was kicked off the L.A. Station that has been carrying this pigs program, KGIL. He's going to be replaced by someone not quite as insane, someone named Lars Larson, a conservative talker named Lars Larson. L.A., of course, is the second largest radio market in the country, and stations in Ohio, Mississippi, and Virginia have dropped this pig. So congratulations to KGIL for dropping Michael Savage. Too bad you had to replace him with some squealy little jerk like Lars Larson. But at least Savage is starting to realize a very basic truism that his ilk always liked to jam in the faces of liberals. Hey, Mike! Freedom isn't free, dude!
I've got the nuclear bombs. I've got the chemical stockpile. Your doctrine in the name of democracy is still a policy of insanity. Blood for oil, bodies for oil, power and oil, blood.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. One last thing on McCain. Mike in St. Paul writes, as for McCain, doesn't he realize that using the term race card to describe African Americans who legitimately raise concerns of racism in America is in itself racist? See, this is where McCain and his advisors are just insane. They don't even understand how to use the convoluted language of race or accusations about who is doing what to whom. And Mike writes, finally, I'm sick that Obama has gone over to the dark side on offshore drilling. Robert Kennedy Jr. said it best when he debated the chief financial officer of Exxon and Larry King. RFK said he understands how offshore drilling will benefit Exxon, but fails to see how it will benefit the American people. After all, the Saudis can cut production by 2 to 3%, and any possible reduction in oil prices realized by American offshore drilling would be wiped out. Offshore drilling is a horrific scam. It's tantamount to giving a dying heroin addict just a couple more of his hits before he's forced to go into detox or dry out. I am starving for an American politician to tell the truth. Mike.
Well, yeah. It's amazing how stupid people can be. How, you know, I listened to McCain talking about we gotta have offshore drilling in order to drive down the price of gasoline. And you see the bobbleheads around him applaud. They have no idea. They have no idea. McCain stands there and lies right to their faces. Jesus H. Christ, haven't we had enough? Now we're going to be lied to about this, about everything. Everything that comes out of a Republican's mouth is a lie. Everything. Everything, every single thing. But there stands McCain. He doesn't even know what the hell the term race card means. He probably thinks it's a card that the King of Hearts is black or something. I don't know, but he doesn't know how to use it. The language. And he says, well, I believe the oil companies. Well, dumbass, the American Petroleum Institute is contradicting what you say oil company execs say, and the American Petroleum Institute speaks for the oil company executives, you freak. Ah. No, I can't do this. I can't go through another 4 years of this. I will get out of this business. I will leave talk radio in a heartbeat. You hear that? Listen, Kathy, listen. Hear that? That's all the right-wing knuckle-draggers going, yeah, get out of there, Malloy, you son of a bitch.
All right. Obama has come out. He said he could accept, this is just today. He said he could accept an expansion of offshore oil drilling if it's in a broader package of what he calls energy measures that would free the logjam on energy bills in Congress. I don't know what he means either. Here's what he said, though, in an interview with the Palm Beach Post. He said, quote, my interest is in making sure we've got the kind of comprehensive energy policy that can bring down gas prices. If, He adds, in order to get that passed, we have to compromise in terms of a careful, well-thought-out drilling strategy that was carefully circumscribed to avoid significant environmental damage. I don't want to be so rigid that we can't get something done. End quote. That's his quote. Carefully circumscribed. That means written around, right? To avoid significant environmental damage. Oh, so moderate environmental damage is acceptable, Mr. Obama? Unbelievable. McCain has switched his position on the issue of offshore drilling, especially around Florida. Florida Governor Charlie Crist, Republican, who had been opposed, he shifted, and now Obama is opening the door to his own shift. He said in the Palm Beach Post interview, quote, the Republicans and the oil companies have been really beating the drums on drilling, and so we don't want gridlock. We want to get something done, end quote. Well, there you go. Is there anybody out there? Is there anybody out there who still believes that Barack Obama is not Republican light? Huh? Sorry! Oh, but Mike, don't do that! We have to have him in there! Think of the Supreme Court! Yeah. All right, Barack Obama got challenged in Florida. Was that today? I think it was today. The organization is, what is it? The Uhuru Movement, I believe that's what it's called, Uhuru, which is Swahili for freedom. He was at a campaign rally in St. Pete. And I just listen to this, all right? Go ahead, roll it.
And distort the free market and work their, get tax loopholes and tax havens in the tax code that everybody suffers. And when our government fails, hold on a second. What's happening, guys? Okay, hold on a second. And when our, that's all right. Listen. Excuse me. Go ahead.
So my question is, in the face of the numerous attacks that are made against the African community or the black community by the same U.S. government that you aspire to lead, and we're talking about.
All right, let me butt in here. All that screaming and shouting, the obviously we've edited this thing down a bit. All the screaming and shouting was a bunch of young people, black young people, were holding up banners in the back of this hall where he was speaking. And finally, Barack stopped everything and had one of his aides take a microphone up. So this young man now is speaking.
I had to lead. And we're talking about attacks like the subprime mortgage that you spoke of that wasn't just a general ambiguous kind of phenomenon, but a phenomenon that targeted the African community and Latino community. Attacks like the killing of Sean Bell by the New York Police Department and Javon Dawson right here in St. Petersburg by the St. Pete Police, okay, and the Gina 6 and Hurricane Katrina, and the list goes on. In the face of all these attacks that are clearly being made on the African community, why is it that you have not had the ability to not one time speak to the interests and even speak on behalf of the oppressed and exploited African community or black community in this country?
All right.
Now, that's where it stops, and I wish I had what he said, and I don't, because in cutting it off there, it is very unfair, and we Kathy and I talked about running this piece of sound because the sound that we have is what you just heard. We did not have his response, and I don't know what he said afterwards. So I don't want to get emails now saying, well, Malloy, you're just like Fox News. You didn't run the cut long enough so that we could hear what Barack Obama responded. And I apologize for that, except, and all I can say is we did not, well, then you shouldn't have run it. Yeah, I wanted to run it because it is a legitimate issue that the Uhuru movement is bringing up. And I respect Barack Obama for stopping his speech and allowing the young man to make his question. I respect the audience for shutting up. You heard all the screaming and booing there when they were trying to close down what these young people were saying when they unfurled their banners. Barack Obama did not have the Secret Service move in and throw them in the street. Barack Obama did give them a chance, but the questions raised by Uhuru are legitimate. They're legitimate questions. That's one thing that is obvious. It's so obvious that Barack Obama is almost afraid, and I understand why, to address some of the political issues on a race basis, because some of the issues have been race-based. Remember Katrina. For 3 days, right? 3, 4, 5, it seemed like it would never stop. We watched corpses floating on our television set. We saw people packed into the Louisiana Dome. We saw people screaming. We had people begging. We had people on top of buildings. Do you remember how many of the faces were white? And as far as the Gina Six is concerned, and the Sean Bell killing, and it just goes on and on and on. These are legitimate questions that any politician should raise. But when you have somebody who is the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party who is a black man, and young black people in this country, who I would assume are very proud of that, I don't know, I'm not black. And even if I were, I might have a different opinion. But I do know that these people have a right, these young people have a right to question. You know, where are you on this one, Senator? Where are you? And Barack Obama apparently dares not address black issues. Why? Because the McCain crowd and the Republicans and the Free Republic thugs and the World News Daily and all these other rat bastards would immediately say, see, he's going to be a Negro president.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, we need to lighten up a little bit. So we're going to talk with Dr. Roger Libby at the top of the hour, coming back, you know, after the break. Roger's an old friend of ours. He's a sex therapist. No, we never saw him on a client therapist basis, but he's also a stand-up comedian, and he's at a conference in Madison, Wisconsin this weekend, put out by Nonstop Radio. And Peter B. Collins is there. Who else is there? Hartman's there. The Young Turk, Cenk, is that how you say his name? Cenk Uygur? I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but there's several progressive talkers there, and Roger Libby is up there, Dr. Libby. So we're gonna have him come on in after the 10 o'clock or the next hour break, 11 o'clock here in the East, and just talk about what's going on up there. He was invited to add an element about sex talk on the radio. he's very much the clinician. It's not like Love Lines or this other garbagey crap. You know, he's very much the clinician. Anyway, but he's also funny. So we're got unintended humor. That's what I like about Roger. It's most of Roger's humor is unintended. But before we do that, in the spirit of lightening up, on Sean Hannity's television program the other night, he had once again his guest, and I'm starting to wonder about these two, Newt Gingrich. That's how Sean got launched into the wonderful world of Fox News, was through the efforts of Newt Gingrich. These two guys are very, very close. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but anyway, once again, Sean was talking with Newt Gingrich, and it came up that he was going to show us all how Barack Obama is really got the wrong idea about offshore oil drilling, and he was going to play an ad and then make fun of it, a Barack Obama ad. This is when, I guess, when Obama was in favor of maintaining the moratorium on offshore drilling. I don't know. It's very hard. I don't watch Sean's program. Don't listen to him. I just know he's a freak. But listen to this. This is kind of funny because obviously his technician or Sean himself pushed the wrong button.
Mr. Speaker, I played this often on the radio today. You referred to it a number of times. I don't think we've got more reaction because a lot of my radio listeners and viewers of Hannity and Combs have signed up to Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less. Here is Barack Obama's plan to lower gas prices, in his own words.
Senator McCain, you let me and my kids down. From the very beginning, I told him this is a principled guy. So when you said you were going to help make driving affordable again, I believed you. Then your idea is to do offshore drilling, which I find out won't produce much oil for 10 years, and then barely save us any money anyway? Okay, that's not a solution, Mr. McCain. That's a gimmick.
All right, that wasn't the cut. The cut was, and what he said, make sure your tires are inflated and your car has a tune-up. Those are the exact words. And that'll be the equivalent of all the drilling that's being proposed out there
Sean,
by those oil companies.
Sean, you got punked. Come on, dude, you got punked. You're not going to be able to sit down for a week. You got punked, punk. Woo! Oh, man, that is so funny. It worked, Kathy. That young intern we set up there to work at on Sean Hannity's program, it worked. It worked. That's all we wanted to do is to punk Sean Hannity, and we did it. Now, of course, we're going to have to pay for the intern to fly back to Atlanta because, obviously, the intern is going to be kicked to the curb first thing in the morning. But, hey, Sean, yo, you got punked, punk. I love it.
Well, obviously, that's not the ad that we wanted to run.
Why not? Why wasn't that the one that you wanted to run, punk? Oh, God. Oh, Lord have mercy. I love moments like that. All right. What else we got? You want to play it one more time? Have we got time to play it once more? You can blow through it. Go ahead.
Mr. Speaker, I played this often on the radio today. You referred to it a number of times.
You're going to get punked.
More reaction because a lot of my radio listeners and viewers of Hannity and Combs have signed up to Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less. Here is Barack Obama's plan to lower gas prices.
In what?
In his own words.
Oh, okay.
Senator McCain, you let me and my kids down. From the very beginning, I told him this is a principled guy. So when you said you were going to help make driving affordable again, I believed you. Then your idea is to do offshore drilling, which I find out won't produce much oil for 10 years.
10 years,
yeah. And save some money anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a solution, Mr. McCain.
What about that, Sean?
That's a gimmick.
Hey, Sean.
All right, that wasn't the cut. The cut was, and what he said.
All right, punk, you got punked. Oh, my God. Well, that wasn't the cut. That wasn't the cut. And if you saw the video, and where did that come from? Crooks and Liars? Or I forget where I got that. Maybe Crooks and Liars. I don't know. I'm very bad about not. Well, no, I'm very good about crediting where I steal stuff, but I'm not sure where we got that piece of video. But that was so funny because if you look at the video, you know, split screen, you got Hannity here and what's his name, Newt over there, a split screen, and when they come back, Newt is crimson. He's just sitting there, like, oh damn, Sean, wrong video, Sean, wrong video. And, of course, Hannity, and by the way, Hannity is blown up like a balloon. He needs to get on some of that OxyContin the same way that Rush did. Oh, well. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Roger Libby, who is in Madison, Wisconsin, for the Nonstop Radio Symposium. Peter B. Collins is there. Donna Halper is there. Tom Hartman, Roger Libby, John Nichols. Is that John Nichols for The Nation, from The Nation? I think so. John Quinlan, Lee Rayburn. Cenk Uygur, and a special video presentation by Rachel Maddow. So it sounds like they're going to have a great weekend. It started today, and we're going to talk with Roger Libby, who does talk radio where it concerns sex. And his topic is sex on the radio, a difficult position to get into. We'll see you in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Beloy. This is Nova M. About 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. A couple of you have sent us the piece of sound that we were missing, and we're going to play it after we talk with Dr. Roger Libby in a moment here. The piece of sound where Barack Obama responds to the young man from the Uhuru movement, and you'll be able to hear, because, like I said, the initial sound that we had, and we thought it was important enough to get it on the air, we did not have the rest of that bit of digitized sound, and we have it now. So we will be playing it for you momentarily. But right now we're joined by Roger Libby, Dr. Roger Libby, an old friend of mine from Atlanta, and who lives in Seattle, and tonight is at a conference, the Nonstop Radio Symposium in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Roger, how you doing?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. I mentioned briefly to people that the symposium is about progressive talk and how to keep it on the air. They have a website, nonstopradio.com.
Right.
You're out there. Peter B. Collins, John Elliott, Donna Halper, Tom Hartman, John Nichols, John Quinlan, Lee Rayburn, Brian Turney, Cenk Uygur, and a special video presentation from Rachel Maddow. Now, I notice on the event schedule here that you're going to be speaking tomorrow about sex on the radio.
Yes. I'm going to talk about how we need a show with progressive talk radio that would go way beyond Loveline, which is the only show in town. It's kind of a tired old conservative show.
You're not a tired old conservative, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm a liberal, and I'm proud of it, just like you, Mike.
Yeah?
I'll always be a liberal.
What is your oh, Jesus, Roger. What is your take on talk radio being a venue for sex talk? Why should there be a program on sex talk? Before you answer, let me just say, when Roger lived here in Atlanta, he did a show at 99X, which was the hot progressive station, or the progressive music station here. It was not talk radio. It was nonstop progressive rock. And he did a show on Saturday nights. It turned out to be the top-rated show in Atlanta, and it was called, what was it called?
The Pleasure Dome.
The Pleasure Dome, right. And so Roger's had, he's had experience, or Dr. Libby. May I call you Roger?
Yes, of course.
Roger's had a lot of experience doing sex talk on the radio, but why? Why should there be sex talk on the radio?
Well, it's like the comparison with sex on radio or television. You can go into more depth. The audience gets a sense of who you are. They trust you. You can go further. You can just be more interactive, just like you are on your own show.
You can go further.
Be more interactive, yeah.
Be more interactive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
we need sex on the radio, Mike.
Why? Why? The country's going to hell, Roger.
Yeah, but where are people getting any accurate information? The schools don't do hardly anything. I mean,
right.
you got a conflict between comprehensive sex education, which basically doesn't exist, so we can't evaluate it, and abstinence. Yeah. And that's been the approach from Congress. Billions of dollars spent to teach people not to have sex and not give them any information about being careful or safe or anything else.
Now, you're against any abstinence-only programs, but it's my understanding that in knowing you, the 30 years I've known you, that you're not really keen on the idea of kids having sex.
No. In my recent book, The Naked Truth About Sex, I talked about how I think it'd be a good idea if they waited till they're out of high school to have intercourse, but most of them aren't waiting, and we have to deal with that reality, and we're not.
Mm-hmm. How? What would be the most sensible, not liberal, not conservative, not religious, not atheistic, the most sensible way to deal with emerging sexuality in students, say?
Well, I think we should start like the Swedes do in kindergarten and just give some basic information about where we came from, et cetera, and then go through till 12th grade with a graduated approach to giving you accurate information about reproductive biology, about birth control, about relationships, about intimacy, about pleasure, the whole gamut.
Why has there been such an attitude in this country? And you and I have talked about this before, but why has there been such a repressive attitude in this country about sex when every single thing is sexualized? Everything. I don't care what it is, it's sexualized, especially if it's in media, and yet there is still this overarching repression where it concerns sex. Explain that one to me.
Yeah, well, the repression is why we have the sensationalism. I mean, like most pornography is developed in Denmark, the Danes don't need it. They just sell it to us because we're a more repressed culture. And so because we're repressed, you see all this sensationalizing to balance that repression, but it doesn't balance it with information. It's just, you know, explicit depictions, that kind of thing.
How would you answer a critic that would say, all right, Dr. Libby, you're suggesting sexual intercourse outside of marriage in the age of AIDS?
I can talk about that realistically. The CDC has always, overestimated the threat of heterosexual AIDS transmission. We know from that Wall Street Journal analysis back in 1996, which is a year-long, the research they did on that. And also my friend Bill Darrow, who used to work at the CDC, talked to me about how he was censored on what he could say, not just about AIDS, but about other STDs. The truth doesn't always come out. The truth gets censored on the higher level of government in terms of research that the CDC does.
Well, yeah, I think we can all agree on that. But still, what is your position on active sex life vis-a-vis the possibility of STDs, including AIDS?
Well, obviously, Mike, you have a higher chance of getting other STDs like HPV, the genital warts virus, and now we have this new vaccine, which is going to help some for young girls. But HPV and chlamydia are very common, and we have to protect ourselves. And safe sex and having pre-sex discussions and knowing your partner are all ways to prevent STDs. But the transmission of HIV heterosexually is not as rampant as the media originally made it out to be. They don't make it out to be quite as big a threat now, because it's not. I'm not saying there's no threat, but you have to try a little bit hard to get HIV from heterosexual intercourse. You've got to have repeated intercourse with a person who has the disease on the average.
But how does that square what you just said? How does that square with the latest?
I'm saying other STDs are more common.
What I was going to say, how does what you are saying square with reports that I have seen recently, Roger, that heterosexual transmission of the AIDS virus or the HIV virus is one of the groups experiencing the highest number are heterosexual black women.
Mm-hmm. There are reasons for that. That's because there's repeated intercourse without protection. There's repeated intercourse and there's not enough testing in that population. So, in other words, you have to qualify assertions, and that's what Drew Penske at Loveline doesn't do. He doesn't qualify anything. He'll just say blanketly that, you know, all sex before marriage is not a good idea, or, you know, he's opposed to choice with abortion, et cetera, et cetera. And you just can't make blanket assertions without qualifying them.
What about homosexual sex and the transmission of AIDS?
Well, we know that it's a much more efficient way to get the disease. Yeah, I mean, anal intercourse and needles are two of the most prevalent ways to get the disease.
When you say and needles, you're referring to a non-sexual way of transmitting that disease.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yes.
All right. You talk about in your books. You have talked about what you refer to, and not euphemistically, but pretty directly, the pre-sex discussion. Explain what a pre-sex discussion is.
Well, Mike, it's essentially interviewing each other about any history of problems like STDs, whether there's birth control, what kind of birth control, what it would mean, to see if you're on the same page.
Now wait a minute. Do you do this? When do you do this? When
you do it before you have sex.
Well,
I mean, you know.
Well, I know that, Roger. Yeah, that's why it's called.
Mike, preferably before you're in the sexual situation where you're all aroused with each other.
You can acknowledge
that there's an attraction, but you got to discuss what the hell you're doing.
No, what I'm talking about, Roger, and we're going to have to get this on the other side of the break, but I'll give you the question. When do you sit down with the man or the woman that you're maybe on the second or third date, and the idea of sex is starting to rear its rear? When do you have that discussion? Now, don't answer now, because I got to take a break.
All right. Sure.
We'll pick that up when we come back.
Okay.
We're talking with Roger Libby, who is in Madison, Wisconsin, from his home and office in Seattle for this Nonstop Radio Symposium this weekend. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Turn off your light. Go to bed with Mike Malloy every night on Nova M Radio.
You didn't play that one. We're talking with Dr. Roger Libby, who is in Madison, Wisconsin. I guess that was you laughing, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty funny. Go to bed with Mike Malloy every night, right?
Yeah, that is. That's a real knee slapper. Roger is in Madison, Wisconsin. He is a practicing therapist in Seattle. Where he lives, and Roger's at the Nonstop Radio Symposium that is all about opening up markets to progressive radio and keeping those that are in existence. There are a lot of speakers out there for this weekend, and Roger Libby is one of them. Dr. Roger Libby is talking about sex on the radio. All right, now what was the question I asked you?
You asked me about when you would conduct a pre-sex discussion as a part of
do,
safe
sex. Do you do this? I mean, if you go to pick up a date, whether you're a man or a woman, you go to the other person's house, or you're a man and a man or woman, it doesn't matter. You go to the other person's house to pick up the date, and as you and the date walk to the car, is this your first date? And as soon as you, as soon as he, she, or whatever opens the door, you think, wow, okay. When do you have the pre-sex discussion, Roger? First date, second date, third date?
I would have it once you're in.
Roger?
Those clothes off, because you want to find out whether it's a good idea.
Wait, you dropped off there. Say it again. I would have it when?
Well, before you start tearing each other's clothes off, at least, you got to have a discussion. You want to know whether there's any problem with STDs and whether birth control is being used and what it would mean.
Right. No. I have no problem with the idea of people who are about to have sex having a pre-sex discussion, but do you do it over drinks, over dinner, over dessert?
You could do that, yes. In fact, a series of discussions, more than one discussion is a better idea because you can be more thorough.
And that doesn't kill the kind of flighty, romantic...
Well, if it's that flighty, maybe it's not a good idea to begin with.
Well, that's true, too. All right, so once the pre-sex discussion has been held, now, does that discussion include anything, any other conversation other than, you know, which one of you has a disease or not?
No, sure, of course. I mean, you talk about, you know, what's going on. What are your feelings for each other? Your attraction for each other. I mean, is this going to be like a one-night stand? Are you going to be sex buddies? Or what are your expectations? Because often, as you know, the two people are on different pages about what it would mean and what the future would be, you know.
Right. All right. You use the term sex buddies. You want to explain
a little bit?
Well, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I think, first of all, we don't live in a monogamous society, and we ought to quit pretending that we do. I mean, people have sex with friends with benefits, and they hook up, and they're not always in love. Let's face reality. And that's why the pre-sex discussion is so important, because it protects you from all of these different circumstances so that you're less likely to make a big mistake and regret it later.
Right. All right. Now, we're kind of drifting here, and I'm drifting. I'm letting the conversation drift. You were actually there in Madison this weekend to talk about the presentation of sex on the radio.
Right, that it's a difficult thing to do because of the FCC and the fear that stations have about the FCC, which I think is exacerbated beyond reality, but they have that fear.
All right, you and I have been talking here for the past, not counting the breaks, maybe 12, 14 minutes. Have we said anything that you think would violate broadcast standards and practices?
Absolutely not, but the station owners and the programmers, they're all worried about sex because of, you know, ever since Janet Jackson and all of that, they're overreacting.
But you heard what the what a court in was it in D.C. ruled the other day, this week, that the fine levied against CBS has been thrown out. It's just been thrown out, that it was ridiculous to fine a broadcaster for something that occurred. Do you think that I know that you are not doing talk radio right now, that you are looking for a gig. Do you think that court ruling will make it easier for you to get on the air?
It might. I just think most people who are in positions of power, like with stations, react out of fear, which is usually irrational. And I think that, I hope to.
Roger, we lost you again. You hope to what?
I hope to have a show on Nova M before long on the weekend. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that would be great fun, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, and then if we were successful, hopefully it would lead to a nightly show that could compete directly with Loveline, which I really want to do.
A nightly show? But, Roger, I'm on at night.
Yeah, well, we'd have to figure out earlier in the day or something. I don't know how we'd do it. But, you know, maybe I'd do it through the Jones or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, Roger, listen, I hope you have a good time at this conference. And I hope you open up all the broadcasters and the syndicators and the people who are there in Madison, Wisconsin this weekend about the would you call it a necessity to have sex talk on the on liberal talk?
I really would, because what other medium, what other venue do we have, Mike? The internet, which is checkered, as you know. I think radio is an excellent medium to discuss sex.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with that. All right, Roger, have a good symposium, okay?
Thanks, Mike, for having me on.
Absolutely. And with any luck, I'll see you at the KPTK gig.
You will see me
in Seattle on the 16th. All right, Roger, take care.
All right, thanks,
all right,
Mike.
You bet. Bye bye. Dr. Roger Libby, sex therapist. Soon coming to your radio, maybe. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I've been running through all these promises to you that I made and I could not keep. But a man never got a woman back, not by begging on his knee. Or I'd crawl to you, baby, and I'd fall at your feet, and I'd howl at your beauty like a dog in heat, and I'd cluck.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
26 before the hour. We're going to be taking some phone calls here in a moment, so if you want to get in the queue, the number is 800-989-1480, about what we've talked about tonight. According to the LA Times, this is how Barack Obama replied. Luther sent this to us. He replied that he had spoken out on the cop killings and on predatory lending, and when the man that you heard tried to argue back, Obama said, quote, "That doesn't mean I'm going to satisfy your positions." And he added, "You can always vote for somebody else." The crowd responded with a standing ovation as the protester sat down stone-faced. The protesters repeatedly interrupted the Q&A session. only to be drowned out again and again by chants of Yes, We Can and boos. All right, this is the part that we did not have earlier. Let's go ahead and play it.
Well, I guess, hold on a second, everybody. I want everybody to be respectful. That's why we're having a town hall meeting. This is democracy at work. And he has a legitimate question, so I want to give him an answer. I think you're misinformed about when you say not one time. Every issue you've spoken about, I actually did speak out on. When it came to, I'm going to go through the very specific examples. I've been talking about predatory lending for the last 2 years in the United States Senate and worked to pass legislation to prevent it when I was in the state legislature. I have repeatedly said that many of the predatory loans that were made in the mortgage system did target African American and Latino communities. I've said that repeatedly. Number two, Gina Six. I was the first candidate to get out there and say this is wrong, there's an injustice that's been done, and we need to change it. That's number two. When Sean Bell got shot, I put out a statement immediately saying this is a problem. Don't start shouting back. I'm just answering your question. On each of these issues, I have spoken out. Now, I may not have spoken out the way you would have wanted me to speak out, which is fine, because Hold on a second. Remember, I've got other people, so I'm just trying to answer your question. So what I'm saying is, here's what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that on each of these issues that you mentioned, I have spoken out. And I've spoken out forcefully. And I was a civil rights lawyer. I passed the first racial profiling legislation in Illinois. I passed some of the toughest death penalty reform legislation in Illinois. So these are issues I've worked on for decades. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to always satisfy the way you guys want these issues framed, and I understand it. Which gives you the option of voting for somebody else. It gives you the option to run for office yourself. But those are all options. But the one thing I think is important is that, you know, we're respectful towards each other. And what is true is I believe that the only way we're going to solve our problems in this country, is if all of us come together, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, young, old, disabled, gay, straight. That, I think, has got to be our agenda. All right.
Okay. All right. Thanks to Luther, who sent in the link to the entire response by Barack Obama. If you want more information about the organization represented by the young protester there, go to Uhuru, U-H-U-R-U, U-H-U-R-U, movement.org, uhurumovement.org. Again, it's uhurumovement.org. Somebody emailed me and said, well, you know, they're obviously a plant. They're obviously a Karl Rove operation. No, I don't think so. I really don't.
The Uhuru movement is extreme far left. It's, I believe it's a communist organization. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they are challenging Barack Obama on issues that, as Barack Obama said, on issues that are important to them. And Obama may not answer the way these folks would like an answer, just like he sure as hell doesn't give answers the way that satisfy me. You understand what I'm saying with that? So you got to give him gold stars, though, for handling this the way he did, Obama. And also gold stars to the young man who stood up and challenged Senator Obama. I don't think there were any losers in that. I know that Barack Obama has to walk a fairly narrow path here. This is racist America. You can't get around that. We are not non-racist. I mean, it's great to see the rainbow of faces in Barack Obama rallies, but and that's a good thing. And all the Democrats that have voted to make this man the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, that's a good thing. But this is still America. This is still a very, very, very racist society. You know this as well as I do. Let's not pretend. Let's not go too far here in kidding each other that all of a sudden America has gotten over 350 years of racism, because we haven't. I mean, we haven't. We just haven't. So it's a narrow path that Barack Obama has to walk on this particular issue, the issue of race relations, the issue of what have you done for black folk? Now, the question, I'll just say it. The question from the Uhuru guy was kind of parochial, given the fact that Obama is trying to be, as he said, he'd like to be president of the gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile, able-bodied, not so able-bodied, just come together and be president. He's being mocked about that attitude by a lot of Republicans. I don't think that's a reason to mock him. I think he ought to be challenged on his positions. I've said that from the beginning. You know, I've been one of the people who have been caught up in the Obama mania. I admit it. There's something about seeing a young visionary. Yeah, he's light on the specifics, of course. Give those speeches. Then when you start to find out, well, now wait a minute. Wait. You voted for FISA? Wait. You're saying you do want offshore drilling? Wait a minute. You don't see anything wrong with the ruling by the district court, the Supreme Court about guns in D.C.? Well, you don't have a problem with death penalty for this or that? That, I think, is, those are issues that Senator Obama can be challenged on. Oh, and by the way, in listening to that tape, that sound, I don't know why I keep calling it a tape, but there's no tape anywhere within 1,000 miles of us, but the part of that sound, I kept thinking, gee, and some of you people say I stutter and stammer? Please. All right, let's do some phone calls here. Doug is calling from Indiana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Doug, welcome to the program. Doug?
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I have a question for you. Now, I will admit to you I'm more conservative than liberal on many issues. In fact, a lot of issues. There's some things I do really like about Barack Obama. But one thing about the Democratic Party, and specifically that happened this afternoon, was I'd like to know what your opinion was of the Democrats leaving and take a 5-week paid vacation on the taxpayers instead of sticking around and addressing the issue of the energy bill that was introduced and working out a possible energy bill that could help the citizens of the United States. And I guess where I'm looking at it is, back in 1995, the Republican Congress introduced an energy bill that President Clinton at the time vetoed because he said it would be 10 years before we'd be able to get the oil out of the American soil and into the market. Well, at that point in time, that would have been 3 years ago, we'd have seen that oil. What, in your opinion, did they do right or wrong, if anything wrong, by not addressing that and just simply going home and taking a 5-week paid vacation?
All right, let me put you on hold, Doug, and because I got to do a break here, I'll try to answer it when we come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Before the hour, well, our caller hung up, but I'll try to answer in a second. Thanks to the technical staff of the Malloy program, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, also the creative staff, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. In response to the caller's question, first of all, about the Democrats leaving and taking a 5-week vacation, just one question in response to that. Did the Republicans stay there? Did they say, no, we're so dedicated to an energy bill, we're going to stay here? Look, I don't think they did. I'm just being a smartass with you. I think Congress sucks, period. What is the approval rating of Congress? 14%, 15%? Now, a lot of people want to spin that in a political sense and say, well, that's because it's run by Democrats. No, I don't think so. It's because of what Congress has done for the past 7 or 8 years. Granted, the Democrats have been in charge for a year and a half, and they are immobilized. They are useless. If the legislative branch of government does not reassert itself, does not stop responding to lobbyists and start responding to the people, that will be one of the key reasons why we have lost what the framers handed off to us, an experiment in self-government. We are this close. And if I were on TV, you would see that my thumb and forefinger are pretty much pressing against each other. We are that close in losing what Jefferson and the boys gave us. So my reaction to, it doesn't matter to me if they're Democrats or Republicans in Congress, in the House or the Senate, to walk out. And again, if the Republicans stayed there and are busy working on legislation, okay. But I don't think that's the case. The Democrats are just as rotten as the Republicans. Remember, the Republicans would not allow the Democrats to hold here. We can go back and forth on who's the bigger bunch of wastes of time. As far as self-governance is concerned, the Democrats or the Republicans in the House and the Senate, we can go back and forth on that, and it will come out a draw. Both parties are in the tank where it concerns the legislative branch. There's no question about that. None whatsoever. So I don't know if that answers or not. What was the other part of the question? I don't know. All right. Well, I'm sorry you hung up, because I would have certainly given you the best shot. Email here. I want to just read it to you very quickly. This is regarding the Barack Obama and the hecklers. This is from JR. Writes, Mike, as a proud African-American man who lives in the neighborhood of Chatham in Chicago, who went to public schools, grammar school, high school, University of Illinois Community College, who paid every dime of my tuition out of my pocket, no loans or grants, and now own a small business. I've seen this Pan-African Act before. He's referring to the protesters. I've seen this Pan-African Act before. You may remember that those liberation brothers, quote, of the 60s and 70s, sold out in one form or another. This is an extension of the Jesse Jackson comment on Fox TV, the one that we weren't supposed to hear. There's an old story in the black community about crabs in the barrel. This is one of those attacks. All right, JR, I'm not sure what that story is, but all right, what JR is saying is that the young black man who challenged Barack Obama is I'm putting words in JR's email here, but is a fool and should be ignored. Okay. I, like most Caucasians, I have no earthly idea about the inner dynamics inside the black community. I know there is a tremendous dynamic inside the black community that has to do with, to a far greater degree, all those things that operate, used to operate anyway, inside the white community. JR, I'll take your word for it, pal. Thanks a lot for, thanks a lot for writing. That's one thing that white folks, Caucasians are at a complete disadvantage. I've said this before. We don't know anything. We know nothing about the inner dynamics of the black community. And by the black community, I don't mean some monolithic the black community. The black community is just as stratified as the white community, perhaps even more so. But there is a unifying factor in the black community that doesn't exist in the white community. And you know what that is, and I know what that is, and there's no point getting all elaborate about it. But Caucasians will never understand that inner dynamic. We can't. It's beyond us. So if you'll notice, though, that when Barack did start to answer the young brother who was heckling him, Barack changed. Did you notice that? Did you hear it in his voice? Now, I'm not talking about the stammering and stuttering. Obama was in a difficult position in trying to answer extemporaneously or contemporaneously a challenge. I think he answered it real well. But if you notice, the rhythm of his voice, the cadence, I should say. What do you mean, rhythm? The cadence of his voice, the way he spoke, all of a sudden changed. And towards the end of his addressing, if you see the video, at the very end, when Barack Obama decides he's reached the end of addressing this young black man, and he turns his back and starts addressing the audience at large, all of a sudden the cadence changes. Now, people in the black community would say, well, he was speaking white to the audience, he spoke black to the brother, and then he went back to speaking white. Could be. But you see, once again, we Caucasians can observe that. We can hear things that we think we hear, and we don't know if we heard anything or not. You understand what I'm saying, right? Sure you do. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, thanks, JR. I appreciate the email. I'll see you Monday night. Have a good weekend. Whatever you're going to do, do it gently, okay? I'll see you then. Take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Just like my mama said.